We're going to open it upstairs since on this floor I think we're violating fire codes. So there'll be seats available upstairs, and we'll be, for those of you that want to testify that will be sitting upstairs, we'll be calling ahead the three. Not only they're going to be speaking most immediately, but the three beyond, so people can make their way down to the first floor. Really pleased that we're all you're all here and that we're all here. We're going to be starting officially in a few minutes, but for those of you that have never been to a city council session and wish to testify, you sign up on the sheet that's out on that small table at the front of the door. We have some folks that have been key to the work on this project that'll be part of invited testimony at the beginning. And then we will, this is Carla. She's the council clerk, and she'll be calling names in the order that you signed up. The sign-up, the amount of time you have is either 2 or 3 minutes. It depends on how many people have signed up. And we have found that what can be said well in 2 minutes can be said really, really well in, sorry, what can be said well in 3 minutes can be said even better in 2 sometimes. But if you prepared for 3 and you need 3, we will probably take 3. Do you want to grab the list?
Yes.
All right, we have a quorum. So it is 2 o'clock. Today is Wednesday, October 28, 2009. The city council will come back from recess just as soon as Carla returns to the room. So all you'll have to say when you testify is your first and last name, and then that clock on the front of that big hunk of wood will count down the time for you. How many do we have signed up?
9 people.
9 people. All right. We'll go with 2 minutes unless you need 3. Carla, can you please read the titles for council calendar items 1519 and 1520?
Should we do a roll call first?
Oh, yeah, roll call.
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Adams?
Here. Now, can you please read the titles?
1519, adopt the joint City of Portland and Multnomah County Climate Action Plan to reduce local greenhouse gas emissions by 80% from 1990 levels by 2050. And 1520, direct city bureaus to implement policies and programs to put Portland on a path to reduce local emissions of greenhouse gases 80% from 1990 levels by 2050.
All right, I'm very pleased today to be presenting this on behalf of a lot of community partners and other public and private partners. It is the Climate Action Plan, and it is an effort to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions to 80% below 1990 levels. And some of you have the t-shirts and the buttons out there that say 350, and that's very cool to see. Yes. And as we started out with the 80% below 1990 levels by 2050, and the simplicity of the 350 is very attractive. So as we move this into the Portland plan, we'll be looking at that potential measure to replace the 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. I'm gonna have Susan talk about the difference between or Michael Armstrong, the difference between 80% below 1990 levels by 2025 versus 350. But before I do that, Portland is recognized as one of the most sustainable cities, one of the greenest cities in the world. We're consistently ranked as number 1 or 2 in the United States. We're consistently ranked within the top 10. But as I say to every audience, when it comes to comparing us to the rest of the United States, that is very high praise on an incredibly low standard. One of my biggest concerns as mayor who shares this passion to work on climate action, the climate action plan, is that we will believe the national press we get, the positive national press we get, we'll believe it for the wrong reasons. I believe we should believe it to inspire us to do more, to show that we can accomplish and that this is a very hopeful cause. My fear is, as one of your leaders, is that instead we will sit on our laurels, we will see that we've made it, that we've innovated, look at, we're ahead of the pack. and I'm working hard, and I know a lot of you are working hard, that it's the first, not the latter. This carbon reduction plan will also result in more jobs, improved equity, increased energy self-sufficiency, stronger natural systems, and a more adaptable, resilient city, as well as literally savings billions of dollars for residents and businesses. It is closely linked to our economic development strategy. Our economic development strategy seeks to be the most sustainable local economy in the world. We have been the living laboratory where we have shown the rest of the nation that you can be green and economically successful at the same time. So today we're going to be considering adoption of the Climate Action Plan and launch implementation of 15 key components. It requires the work of everyone on City Council, and I appreciate that they have all made a contribution to this draft plan, including the Bureau of Transportation, Environmental Services, Parks, Revenue, Office of Emergency Management, and the Portland Development Commission, in addition to the lead work by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. It is my pleasure to introduce one of our key governmental partners, the co-sponsor of this plan, someone who has worked tirelessly as well to not only do good policy, but to make it happen. And I'm pleased to introduce my partner on this project, Commissioner Jeff Kogan. Thank you for your partnership, and wanted to offer you an opportunity to help frame some issues and comments up front.
Oh, well, thank you, Mayor Adams. Jeff Kogan, Multnomah County Commissioner. I'm really excited to be here today to formally conclude the first step in our exciting partnership about the Climate Action Plan, which is to actually adopt it. Of course, the harder second step is beginning to implement it. This has been a really important project that we've been working on together. And I guess before I go further, I want to acknowledge Kat West, who's the county's sustainability manager, who's here, who's been working along with Susan and Michael and the great team at the city to try and bring this together over the course of the last 2 years. As you suggested, Mayor Adams, this is a really important thing for this community for a couple of reasons. It's really the sweet spot between acting according to our values to confront what is a global crisis, climate change, but also taking advantage of a unique economic opportunity for this region. Before I came in here this afternoon, I was speaking with Christine Irvin, and she mentioned that she had just come back from South Carolina. And in South Carolina, they don't even want to mention climate change. It's not even considered wise to talk about it. And in the global sense, that's really unfortunate because we need our entire nation to get on the same page here. But in terms of our opportunity, there's something to be said for that because we're out front on this. We in Portland and Multnomah County are acknowledging this problem and are acting proactively to begin to address it. And not only is that the right thing to do, but it has tremendous upside for us economically. Whether it's going to be in green building, solar energy, streetcar manufacturing, electric vehicle implementation, or energy efficiency work, any of those areas, which is just a small piece of this, offer real opportunity for jobs and for future prosperity for this region. And that's one of the reasons that this is such an important thing for us to act on quickly and to cement our leadership. It also helps, frankly, build the brand of this region as the leader, as you were mentioning. And maybe we're not yet doing everything as our reputation tells us we should be, but it's a good thing for us to be recognized internationally as a sustainability leader, and that's a good thing for our economy, as well as an opportunity for us to show the rest of the country how to do it right. Now, Multnomah County is really happy to partner with the city here. And we're happy partly because the city has been an amazing leader on this for a number of years. The two governments have been working together for almost a decade now since we jointly launched our first climate action plan. And the county comes to the table with a couple of unique perspectives. One, as the public health agency of Multnomah County, it's our responsibility to help protect the public. And climate change, among other implications, is a potential public health disaster. And so we need to be getting out front of that, identifying the reasons it could be bad, and actually helping prepare for the unfortunately inevitable public health consequences that are coming. And again, the county has a unique role in protecting vulnerable people. And unfortunately, the implications of climate change, as bad as they are for the broader public, are most devastating for people who are less able to help themselves. Now, some have said, what does it matter that the city and the county are taking on climate change? It seems like something that has to be addressed globally. And I just want to put out there that it does need to be addressed globally, but local leadership really matters. And one thing that we've already demonstrated is we can make a difference. The actions that we have jointly taken already have already, and this is, I think, late-breaking information, have already led to a per capita reduction of CO2 emissions of 19% here. And that's at the same time that the rest of the country has increased almost 20%. So what we've shown is that we can make a real difference with our local actions. And that's important both tangibly in terms of actually reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but also in terms of setting an example for others. Because when we show that we can make a difference, it empowers others to make a difference too. And that's why this is such an exciting opportunity for us. It's something that we can establish our leadership, make a real substantive difference on a matter of global concern, and also do it in a way that helps ensure our prosperity for the 21st century. So thank you for the partnership. I'm really excited to be here today.
And one thing just to pick up before I turn it over to Susan and Michael to lead us through the specifics is just to pick up and underline of your great introductory remarks is that the Gordian knot has been around how we're going to pay for this. How do we provide financing, especially to households and private businesses, to get the money up front and get the payback over time? And right now, Portlanders and North Americans can go out and get a loan for a motorcycle, a recreational vehicle, a powerboat, all kinds of products. But you'll find very little opportunity to get the kind of financing for the clean energy retrofit, energy savings and conservation retrofit of your home or a business or a manufacturer. And so this council, with the support of partnership of the county, has passed the Clean Energy Works, which is piloting more than, you know, any more. It's creating jobs. It's going to weatherize a lot of homes. But more than anything else, it helps to untie that Gordian knot, which has been a lack of financing to get these projects done. So we and the nation is looking to us as we work on that pilot effort. So as you look at this, as you hear about the details of this, we've not only laid out tough, aggressive, and beneficial goals, but we're also piloting how we're going to finance implementing them. So with that, Susan Anderson.
So you two provide a hard act to follow. So Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and we're here today because climate change is real and cities can make a difference, a big difference. And not only that, but because we can definitely take action more quickly and more decisively than the federal government. And right now on this issue, if you talk to other cities, cities are where it's at. Cities are where the action is happening. If you, I talk to cities all over the country, London, Cape Town, Sydney, Seoul, back to Portland, all of these cities and hundreds more are developing their own local action plans on climate change. And as we came out with our draft, the first thing we noticed was we instantly, as soon as it hit out, we had requests from all over the world to say, how do you do this? How do you look at the numbers and how do you build a plan that's based on science and based on technical data? Because what most cities are doing, frankly, is they don't have the expertise. And so they're out there putting out, here's the 20 things we're going to do, and they don't really know what it's going to add up to and where it's going to be. So this plan is really different that way. So it wasn't always the case that cities cared about this. And back in 1993, now I'm feeling old, but I worked in Mike Lindbergh's office. And Commissioner Mike Lindbergh and I believed that global warming was real, and we called it global warming then. We didn't say climate change. And so we set out to actually map our carbon footprint for the city. So we looked at residential, commercial, industrial, government, energy use, and transportation. Put that all together with the help of utilities, with help from some of the folks at the Oregon Department of Energy. Not a whole lot of people were talking about carbon footprints in those days, but that's what we did. And the result was the plan there on the left with the really fancy graphics there. I think I cut that globe out and pasted it on the front page of that. So things have changed, and a few years later, we joined with the county and to begin to look at not just the city, but countywide, what could we do about reducing greenhouse gas emissions? We set a goal of reducing emissions 10% below 1990 levels by 2010. And when you do these plans, you always think, oh, that's way, a long ways away. But here it is, a couple months away, and it's going to be 2010. And so how have we done? Well, as Commissioner Kogan said, per capita carbon dioxide emissions have decreased by 19%. So that's pretty amazing stuff. And we've put this out there a lot, and so far we haven't found another city that's been able to beat us, at least not in the U.S. However, as all of my friends and half of your friends have all moved to Portland, our population has increased dramatically during that same time. And so we have only really decreased emissions by 1% below 1990 levels. So the blue line there on the graph shows total U.S. emissions are up 14%. The yellow line shows that we're down 1%, but it also shows the gap there in between, and it shows that we're definitely doing some things right. And the amazing thing is that during this whole time, most people didn't know that there was a climate action plan, and most people didn't take action on any of these things because they cared about the environment or global warming. They did it to save money in their homes. They took actions to clean up local air quality, to provide neighborhoods that were more walkable, that were more friendly. We looked at ways to just cut costs in general. And all of those things, it ends up, when you do them all together, it also impacts climate change. And by doing those same things, those are the same things that end up cutting carbon emissions too. So what did we have to do to actually make that line go down in the graph? Well, I think you can tell the story as well as I can. And you guys tell it all the time. You tell it for different reasons. You tell it because you're caring about transportation and land use and how we understood the connections between those things. And we invested in light rail and streetcars and in more walkable neighborhoods. We invested in bike infrastructure. And so we all started biking. We started walking. We invested in energy efficiency. Businesses in Portland are literally, in the past 10 years, have saved hundreds of millions of dollars by investing in energy efficiency. We've created more than 150 in the metro area LEED buildings that are either completed or underway. And we've done our part to kind of walk our own talk here in city government and have cut our own energy bills by $3.5 billion. We worked with utilities and others to promote solar and wind, and we had even adopted our own local biofuels ordinance. And, of course, we recycled. With more than 90% of households participating in recycling and most businesses, as of last year for 2008, we now recycle 67% of all of our waste, residential and commercial. The U.S. average is just over 30%. So, as the mayor said, we're doing a lot of things right, and all of those things added together got us a 1% reduction from 1990 levels. So, you know, that's good, and that's sort of the first step, but it's really just a baby step because that's where we need to go, and it's a long way. Scientists tell us that an 80% reduction by 2050 is essential if we are to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So an 80% cut is where we're headed. We have a plan that you have in front of you and that many of you have taken a hard look at. It's an 80% reduction by 2050. We have an interim goal of 40% by 2030. But we've divided the plan up into three-year action items. So the plan will actually be renewed every 3 years. There are about 90 actions to be taken or started in the next 3 years. So it's a very specific plan. It has some real deliverables, and so we'll be running right as soon as we get up from here to get going. The actions are in 8 different areas. I'm not going to walk through every bit of this. There's a lot of people here, I think, who want to be heard and who have a lot to say, but a couple of the key highlights are obviously, more bike lanes, more streetcar lines, more solar and energy efficiency. There's action items so that we really look at creating the bones, the land use structure for 20-minute complete neighborhoods. We want to look at promoting green infrastructure, eco roofs, green streets, planting trees. And again, to get our own house in order, both the city and the county, in terms of looking at the things we need to do. And also because the sad news is that the climate is already changing, And because of that, the plan also includes direction for the city to assess just how vulnerable are we? How vulnerable are we at the city and the county in terms of energy, water, food, public health, all of those issues, in terms of how changes in the climate have already begun and how those are going to affect us. So something that's very important about this plan, and as the mayor mentioned, is it doesn't stand alone. It's not just about carbon. All of the plans listed here and several others are integrated together. And on purpose, many of them, if you look at the plans, will have the exact same objectives and action items. And we did that because many of these actions you would take to improve the economy, you would do it to offset peak oil issues, you'd do it to make the city more green and have a better infrastructure and work on stormwater issues. So we found that those things are all connected. And I think really for the first time since I've been working at the city, the bureau directors have really begun to work together to understand that the strategies of their different plans need to be linked together. And I think that's a big step forward. A good example is on economic development. As you both mentioned, these companies that I listed here, and now I found every time I do this, I get hit for not having one of my friend's companies on here, but all of these companies here know that there's money to be made. So they could not care at all about global warming, what most of them do, but you wouldn't have to care about this issue. There is demand for products and services in an economy that's going to be a low-carbon economy. And I think the one thing that I know for sure is that the first cities, the first companies that really get this, they're going to be the winners because they will be the ones that get to sell the technologies and the products and the services to everybody else. So I want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for your leadership. And I also want to thank Michael Armstrong, Julia Thompson, and Michelle Krim in particular, and a whole slew of other people in my office, in other city bureaus who helped to put this plan together. Again, as I mentioned, you have to realize that this plan is different than most other cities' plans in that it's really based on good technical background, data, and science. It's not just a wish list. On the way in here, I talked to some folks from Portland General Electric. They said that their CEO was actually reading it, word for word, because he's a very detailed kind of guy, and was really impressed that, in fact, you know, we had the data to support where we're going to go. So I think as we adopt it today, this will become really a model for cities all over the world. So thank you.
Thank you. And Michael, in terms of moving forward, what would you say is the most important sort of top of mind concern or hope that you have in terms of moving forward?
When we look at the plan and when we look at where emissions come from, we've got transportation at around 40%, buildings a little over 40%. We need to launch major initiatives around both of those if we're going to shift this long-term emissions trajectory. We have great work that's been initiated addressing both of those. It really needs to accelerate. For transportation, a big piece of that is figuring out a sustainable funding source that will let us invest in the kind of improvements that we need. For buildings, I think you hit it on the nose. It's accessing capital to invest in retrofitting our existing buildings. We've started down that path. We need to really hit that hard.
One thing that we did 8 town halls on this issue, and then I went up and was part of the event with Gregor Robertson, the mayor of Vancouver, BC, and last week he laid out and proposed his Greenest City initiative. And what I just sort of, before I move on to other panel folks, one thing that I think is really important, a bottom line to your point, is it's got to be a bunch of individual actions we all take in our own life and some key big systemic changes as well. It has to be both. So this is a great group. Thank you very much. Give them a round of applause. President David Bragdon, Christine Urban from the Steering Committee, and Angus Duncan of the Oregon Global Warming Commission, if you'd come forward. Mr. President.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Christine. Hello, Angus. Welcome to the City Council. Appreciate you being here. Mr. President.
Thanks, Mayor and Council. I'll keep it brief just to urge your adoption and applaud the efforts so far, but also to pledge our support. Our agency's been very involved in developing this program with your staff. Your staff's been great to work with. Of the 8 areas that are listed there, there's 3 or 4 that we have We bring a lot to the table in terms of planting trees and improving chances for people to recycle, and of course, our transportation network. So we look forward to continuing to work with you and make this a reality, and applaud your efforts on it.
Well, thanks for being such a great partner with us and helping to push this agenda regionally. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Christine.
Mayor Adams, council members, I am Christine Irvin, a member of the steering committee for this climate plan, and as you might imagine, I am here most enthusiastically to encourage your support for the resolution and the plan. And I think as you've heard and as you will hear, the plan really does build on Portland's pioneering record. It links to any number of actions that you've already approved that will keep Portland being the global leader in sustainability. It helps position us for a rapidly changing world while yielding such an array of benefits. And it is a plan that underscores the role of cities. As you know, 75% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions are generated in cities. And as Commissioner Kogan and Susan emphasized, that gives us a special weighty responsibility to take bold action, not only because we're one of those cities, because so many turn to us as a model. You know, in my role with the U.S. Department of Energy, and even later with the U.S. Green Building Council, I often heard concerns when we raised the bar for building codes and appliance standards, and even where we set the limits for LEED. But time after time again, we would see that those limits and those goals would just unleash innovation, creativity, even beyond what we had anticipated. And that's, of course, what we're just beginning to see now with clean energy technologies, now that a clear signal has been sent that we will move forward to a low-carbon economy. I think what is unprecedented about climate change is the incredible speed in which it is occurring and accelerating, and the scope, and the impact on so many natural and human systems, ranging from fisheries to national security. And it's also symptomatic of the economic paradigm that you referred to, Mayor Adams, that really discourages investments in the future. It's the same market signals that gave us the short-sighted derivatives that we're paying for so clearly. And so by not putting a value on those services that ecosystems give us, and certainly climate being the chief one, our markets inherently discouraged those kinds of investments through prices or tax codes or the way we emphasize upfront costs rather long-term costs, even not disclosing information so that consumers can make good choices. All of this is to suggest that a meaningful climate action plan has to reflect that sense of urgency, a broad scope of efforts, an integrated set of efforts, and efforts to overcome market disincentives. And I'm so pleased that this plan does exactly that. And in a very Portland-esque way, it sets that bold vision coupled with very pragmatic, street-savvy strategies. I'm here proud to be an Oregonian and a resident of Portland. Thank you for your leadership. I really think these decisions we'll look back on, and these will be some of the proudest moments in our professional and personal lives. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the steering committee, for your work on the Sustainability Commission as well. Really appreciate it. Mr. Duncan.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, thank you for the invitation. My name is Angus Duncan. I'm president of the Bonneville Environmental Foundation, and I chair the Oregon Global Warming Commission. And it's nice to be back in City Hall, although at the risk of dating myself, everyone was turned the other way last time I was here.
It has been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while. Thank you. So first, I want to thank the city and the county for making our job as a state global warming commission a whole lot easier and making us look a whole lot better than otherwise we might. The good news is that the state of Oregon is on track to meet its 2010 goal of arresting the increase of greenhouse emissions statewide and bending that line back downwards, but we know we wouldn't be able to do that were it not for the work that the city and the county have done over the last 10 years. The city and the county are also evidence for other communities that this task is a doable task. I wish I got to go to the same community Susan got to go to, but I go to Bend and Newport and Medford, and that's not all bad.
Hey, wait a minute. I grew up in Newport.
I grew up in Medford.
Okay.
It's okay.
And you're allowed to say that.
Yes. And we appreciate that you are also evidence that this is doable without sacrificing economic well-being, that to the contrary, it contributes to both our environmental and our economic competitive edge in Portland, in the county, and in Oregon. I'd like to add special thanks and recognition to your staff, to the steering committee, to all of the other folks who contributed to this. It's an exceptional piece of work. Let me offer just a very few comments on the contents. First, I appreciate greatly the fact that this is goals plus actions. We proved in Oregon back in the early 1990s that setting goals alone is a completely sterile exercise. It produced nothing but growth in greenhouse gas emissions, and both the city, the county, and the state, I think, have learned that lesson. Secondly, that Multnomah County, Portland, and Metro have a special leadership opportunity in demonstrating how to integrate transportation, land use, and urban design options and innovations. There are urban areas around the world, all the ones that Susan goes to, I presume, who are looking to this area for, I'm not bitter, Susan, who are looking to this area for ideas and innovative solutions, and this plan reflects, I think, awareness of that obligation. I would commend the city for not just planning for building retrofits, but for moving ahead with clean energy works, both as a policy matter and because my house is in the queue, and so I'm going to watch and see exactly how well this works. And I would especially applaud the inclusion by the city of waste management. This is an area of emissions that almost all plans neglect. Even the state's plan acknowledges it, but doesn't really do anything about it. We are working in a catch-up mode on that, but we will, and we appreciate the example. If there's an area where the plan, I think, could be strengthened, at least by follow-on work, follow-on efforts, it is that you and we can be clearer in our expectations of what other parties have to do to make your work here and ours in Oregon a success. There are regulatory and investment authorities that have to be deployed by utilities, by the PUC, by other state agencies, and most of all by the federal government. And I will spare you my long list, but I want to mention one in particular, and that is that only a federal carbon cap will leverage the kinds of technologies and the kinds of investments that are going to enable this plan to succeed and the city and the county to meet its goals. Absolutely essential. And then let me close just with this sort of broad observation that we are in the process of changing a society that was built over the past 200 years on fossil fuels and prospered on fossil fuels. And changing that is truly a transformational exercise. It will not be solved by incremental actions. To meet a 2050 goal of 80% below 1990 levels, and that's probably not the stretch goal we have to go to, but to meet even that by one calculation requires that we reduce our carbon intensity by an order of magnitude. We're now about 0.55 tons per $1,000 of GDP in this country, and we have to get to 0.05 tons per $1,000 of GDP. That's a huge, huge transformational leap. I did a little bit of research, and the only other socioeconomic circumstance I can come up with that requires this broad a change occurred in the last half of the 18th century. From there to today, labor productivity has increased by about an order of magnitude. And we did that by substituting fossil fuels for animals and humans. And that took about 250 years. For this transformational change of an equivalent magnitude, we have 40 years. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your work. Next, we will hear from Fred Hansen at TriMet, from Maurice Remming from O'Neill Electric, and from Ruben Planico from PGE. Welcome back, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you.
You can go ahead and begin.
Thank you. For the record, Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. I am here really to endorse the whole plan as a member of the steering committee, but because of some of the transportation issues, I want to speak specifically to the urban form and mobility elements, the chapter two. I just have really 4 points. First, I think the plan is very good in the sense that it recognizes one of the most important elements, and that is the built environment is the most important factor in determining transportation outcomes. And if we don't get a hold of that, we're not going to bulldoze down already built structures very easily. As a result, we must get it right to begin with, and I think that's the key element of what the plan is calling for, and certainly what we as a region have done so well about with Metro, the city, all the jurisdictions. Second point is that we sometimes think about, at least on the transportation side, of it in supply and demands equation. The supply side is something that the federal government has taken action on. I think more needs to be taken. But that is on the propulsion systems, the CAFE standards that the Obama administration has addressed. And secondly, on fuel. And although certainly still more needs to be done on low carbon fuels, steps are being taken, certainly by California. But the demand side of that equation is the most important. That is, how much we are driving. And we realize that that built environment, my first point, really is, in fact, making the biggest difference on how much we really drive. The plan is aggressive in the 30-year time frame to be able to see a 30% reduction in VMT. Very important. We recognize that work trips are only about one-fifth of all of our trips. And so dealing with total VMT reduction is critical. Third point, I think, that's very important in the plan is it recognizes equity. That is, it's looking at the issue of housing costs as well as transportation costs as a part of that equation. It is the only way we're going to be able to get to affordable housing, and actually the only way we're going to be able to take into account the full cost of the old strategy of drive until you qualify. It must be, in fact, we must reverse that. Fourth and last, the emphasis on walkable neighborhoods is so very important. And from a transit standpoint, 78% of our riders access the system by walking. And there are others by bicycle, some by park and rides, but the vast majority are by walking. And we need to be able to make sure that walking environment is one that invites people, that in fact is safe. There are safe crossings of streets, there are sidewalks, all the other things that make for the walkable neighborhood. With that, I will close and say a special thanks to Susan and all the other staff that's worked on that. We really are proud to be a part of this effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. Hi, Maurice.
Well, one thing I'd like to say is as we invite and involve the community into reducing this global warming, I'd like to say that we invite all of them into participating with the new jobs that will be created through either light rail or green buildings. And so the equity piece of this is, for me, very important. And I do like the fact that we are involving all groups, both women and minority groups, into this equation. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say. And thank you again.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi, Mayor Adams and members of the council. My name is Ruben Plantico. I'm Director of Environmental and Sustainability Policy for Portland General Electric. And on behalf of PGE, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here to comment on this important action plan. I want to begin by commending the City of Portland for its national leadership on climate change. As the first city to adopt a plan to reduce CO2 emissions in 1993, and then to see actual reductions from 1990 levels is truly an impressive accomplishment. As Oregon's largest utility, serving more than 50% of the state's electricity company customers and better than 65% of Portland and Multnomah County customers, we have an important stake in helping implement many of the features of this action plan. In fact, we take considerable pride in our own efforts since 1990 in support of greenhouse gas reductions in Portland. Before the formation of the Energy Trust of Oregon, which we supported, BGE energy efficiency programs exceeded goals every year, resulting in more than 123 average megawatts in energy efficiency savings up to 2001, which is the equivalent of a 210 megawatt gas plant under normal circumstances. We also played a key role in developing Oregon's aggressive renewable portfolio standard, and our customers have responded to our renewable energy product offerings by making us the number one utility in the country for residential customer participation. And we are on track to meet the 25% renewable goal by 2025. The City and County Climate Action Plan is a thoughtful, ambitious plan of complex dimension that will encounter challenges along the way and that will require collaborative and flexible thinking as well as productive partnerships throughout our metropolitan area. In that spirit, I want to highlight some areas where we have special interest in working with the city and county. On economic development, we were pleased to see recognition of the importance of continuing to grow our economy and the link to Portland's five-year economic development strategy. PGE strongly and actively supports the efforts to make the region a front runner in traded sector jobs focused on environmental technology. However, at the same time, we must be careful to protect our existing economy in this transition to a low carbon future. A key element of our economy is a reliable, affordable electricity supply and delivery system. As Portland implements the action plan, we urge you to keep in mind the importance of maintaining a level playing field for existing businesses that must compete on a statewide, regional, national, and international level. With respect to buildings and energy, PGE has a wealth of experience in many of the areas cited for action, including district energy, on-site renewable energy, and, of course, energy efficiency. We believe the city can and should take advantage of our experience to avoid market missteps and create a positive customer experience in the implementation. Let me point out two areas among several where we can help. We are aware of the longstanding objective to achieve the 100% renewable energy target for city facilities, and I want to reiterate PGE's interest in helping the city realize that goal. We can help with a strategy and possibly some pilot projects for converting the 40,000-plus streetlights in the metro area to more efficient technologies such as LED lighting. And certainly continuing to collaborate throughout the planning and implementation, as the mayor has mentioned, of the important Portland Clean Energy Works program is crucial to achieving success on the scale that is looked for in the action plan. And just a note about the promise of electric vehicles, PGE believes that one of the best ways to reduce tailpipe emissions will be through the electrification of motor vehicles. Our region is the recipient of a significant grant to hasten installation of a charging infrastructure, and it is important that PGE and the city continue to work together to assure public area installations align with your plans in a timely and affordable manner. Finally, PGE is encouraged by the recommendation to establish a business leadership council. Businesses are in tune with the market implications of actions that affect their economic competitiveness, and their input will be crucial to gaining broad support for implementation of the action plan. With that, I want to thank you again for the opportunity to be here, and our relationship with the city is a very important one, and we look forward to our continued collaboration on important projects like this one.
We agree. We've got a lot of work to do together. Thank you very much.
You.
The next three will be Gillian Florin, Aaron Flynn, and Leslie Carlson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back. Go ahead.
I'm Gillian Florin. I'm the Vice President for Marketing and for Business Retention for Greenlight Greater Portland. Greenlight is the region's private sector economic development group that was created to market and promote the metro region in order to drive the growth of jobs and the economy. It's for this reason, for its ability to spur economic growth, that Greenlight supports the Climate Action Plan. First, the Climate Action Plan will create jobs. By supporting climate protection measures, we accelerate the regional demand for green goods and services in areas where we have existing strengths and momentum in building design and construction, energy systems and retrofits, in renewable energy development, transportation alternatives, and infrastructure. Second, while the Portland region is known for leadership in these areas, other metros are catching on and catching up. The Climate Action Plan will be a driver in enhancing the region's competitiveness in these ways. Jobs in these emerging clean sectors will continue to attract talent. Growth of these sectors will lead to exportable expertise and services. Savings gained from energy efficient infrastructure and transport will be reinvested regionally. And not insignificantly, the Climate Action Plan will bolster the Portland brand, which is a key tool in the kit to attracting business and talent. Not all regions are blessed with a compelling and alluring brand. Portland is, and central to it is our long-standing green ethos that's been fed by policy designed to protect quality of place and quality of life. With metros everywhere jumping on the green bandwagon, Portland's brand needs to be nurtured and protected so that it continues to stand out as the exception in a field that is increasingly overwhelmed with false claims of greenness and sustainability. Last, a word about collaboration. As Susan said, the Climate Action Plan does not stand alone. While the plan has been under construction, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has also been a key driver in the recently launched Climate Prosperity Project. This effort, spearheaded by the Bureau, Greenlight, Metro, PDC, Oregon Business Council, Oregon Institute for Technology, Nike, and others, is designed to strengthen each of our individual organizational efforts in sustainability and in economic development through ongoing regional coordination and communication. Your support of the Climate Action Plan is endorsement of this important work to realize our potential as a region to protect the natural environment and to maximize economic prosperity.
Jillian, thank you very much. And I just want to underscore for folks that might not know it, the Greenlight Greater Portland is a business promotion, jobs creation effort that's funded completely by the private sector. And so the fact that Greenlight has been such a good partner on this and such a good champion for it should not go without special note. Thank you.
Thank you.
Erin Flynn.
Good afternoon, City Councilors, Mayor. My name is Erin Flynn. I am the Urban Development Director at the Portland Development Commission, and I am here to pledge PDC's support for the City-County Climate Action Plan, particularly in light of our work on the city's five-year economic development strategy, which you all heard about this morning, I understand, in some detail. And thank you for support of our implementation strategy. What I want to say is that really the Climate Action Plan and the work that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability have done on this plan go hand in hand with the city's five-year economic development strategy. In fact, I would refer to the Climate Action Plan as a sister plan of the economic development strategy. As you all know, Portland is at the forefront of a group of global cities that are demonstrating that economic development and climate change do not have to be inconsistent and, in fact, can be complementary. We are leading with a clean tech strategy in our economic development strategy that will help accomplish many of the goals laid out in the Climate Action Plan. We have also made a goal to create the most sustainable city in the world through the economic development strategy, and the goals and the action items included in the Climate Action Plan are part and parcel of many of our action items. So these two strategies are deeply linked. We're working very closely with our partners in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and again, just here to pledge support and let you know that we are working together to build a clean, green city. Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Leslie Carlson. I'm the co-chair of the Portland Multnomah County Sustainable Development Commission. And I'm here to bring the Commission's support for the plan. We had a former member, Christine Irvin, who sat on the steering committee, and a current member, Kent Snyder. We've been intimately involved with the plan and have been reviewing it for a long time. I do have three points I want to bring up, longer-term issues that we see as part of the implementation phase of this plan. The first one is, one of your resolutions today has a 2012 check-in with the Planning Commission, the Sustainable Development Commission, and with the City Council to report on how we are doing on the Climate Action Plan. And we think that's a good first step, but we are going to have to think about who and how we are going to watchdog this plan out to 2050. I'm not even sure most of us will be alive then, so this is something we're going to have to do for future generations, and I think that is going to be something we're going to have to see in the future. The second is, we are so excited about the goals in this plan and the actions, but we also think that they are going to be extremely hard in some situations for us to transform the way we do business and meet our goals. And one example I'll give you, Metro recently did an analysis of the regional transportation plan where they looked at some preliminary greenhouse gas numbers for the $20 billion that we are going to spend over the next 25 years in transportation in this region, and they found that that would be an increase of 49% in greenhouse gas emissions. Now, obviously, we're going to have to rethink the way we do those transportation projects because we cannot do that out in 2035. And I think I just want to echo the comments of others who have talked about innovation. We really feel like this has the opportunity to unleash innovation, and I'll give you one specific example. We had an opportunity as a commission to tour some Green Street projects, essentially stormwater management, bioswales, that the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Portland Bureau of Transportation have been working on. These aren't just stormwater management tools. They also calm traffic, making biking and walking better, which meets some of the goals in the Climate Action Plan. They make our communities more livable. So those kind of multiple objective solutions, where we're looking at a problem and solving multiple problems, are what we're going to have to look at. And by the way, there's lots of firms in Portland that are becoming really good at building these bioswales and learning how to do this, and they are going to be able to sell their services to the rest of the country and the world. So thank you.
So, Leslie, I just had one observation. You made the comment that in 2050 you did not think most of us would be here. I will be 98, and I intend to be sitting right here, and then I look to my left past Commissioner Fritz, who will still
youngsters,
be here.
At the youngsters.
At the youngsters, left. And I'll look to the very junior but still mayor of Portland, Adams, who will only be a spry 86, and say, what's the update on that plan we adopted back in 2009?
Well, I'll try to bring my walker in and ask about it, too.
You will not need a walker. We're all going to exercise and eat well and breathe cleaner air.
Thank you.
I appreciate that hopefulness. Yes. As we have Mike Houck. Yes, give him a round of applause.
Oh, don't encourage him.
Makes it more entertaining. Mike Houck. And then the first two folks
definitely
that have signed up to testify.
Me.
But to pick up on Leslie's point about the RTP, when I learned on Friday that the RTP's calculation of impact was 49% increase in greenhouse gas emissions, there are sort of a couple of responses. One is, well, for the first time, we've actually calculated. So that was good. So we're no longer acting out of ignorance. So that's a step forward. Now we have to take that region-wide calculation and apply it methodology of analysis down to a project-by-project basis and really look at the priorities based on a variety of factors, but to highlight the factor related to how much greenhouse gas each individual projects under the regional transportation plan, how much greenhouse gases each will produce or save. So I think her comments, I just think, are really important. Mr. Houck, welcome
back. Yes. My name is Mike Houck. I'm director of the Urban Green Spaces Institute, and I'm here also as a member of the Sustainable Development Commission. I'm here to heap huge amounts of praise both on the plan and on the staff, and I will have to say at the outset that we provided a lot of comments regarding the initial draft of this plan, and they were pretty critical, to be frank. There was very little attention paid to a very important issue, adaptation. How are we going to respond to the climate change that we know that it's coming? And not a lot of mention about the green infrastructure. And as you read the final draft of this plan, it's replete with references to the need to adapt and to rely on our green infrastructure to combine with in programs like the Greater Green Approach. The current draft, we believe, strikes the correct balance between mitigation measures that are critical to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and adaptation strategies needed to respond to the severe social and environmental problems we will face with climate change, including impacts to air and water quality, diminished and degraded fish and wildlife habitat, decreased biodiversity, and an increased risk of flooding, landslides, and fires. There is one area, however, in the plan that we are concerned about. And that is, there's no mention of the nexus. Well, the land use planning program is very robust in its reference to mobility and transportation. There's no nexus between the land use planning and land use regulations and protection of natural resources. And so we just simply want to point out that's a major caveat. We think the plan is fabulous. We're very pleased that it does aggressively go after the issue of adaptation. But we're concerned about the lack of nexus with land use planning and natural resources. And with that, I'll just say we appreciate the hard staff work. Michael Armstrong in particular, we met with him a couple times, and as I said, they did a heroic job of taking the public's input. And it's not that often that you see such a dramatic change from one document to another after your input. So we appreciate that.
Well, I think we got, Michael, we got comments on 800 items or 600 items? I think you are responsible for a third of those by yourself.
And I don't know if David Bragdon is still in the room, but we all know we're right now, and Jeff Kogan knows this very well. The same would apply to Metro. We're looking at urban and rural reserves, and as we know that with climate change, floodplains are more than likely going to expand. The issues that we're going to have to deal with stormwater is more than likely going to increase dramatically. That the land use program, both at the regional and local level, are going to be incredibly important.
Thanks for your engagement and input on this. Really.
Thanks for your leadership.
You got it. All right, we're on to three at two.
First three are Terry Parker, Jim Newcomer, and Robin Everett. Please come on up. And they will be followed by Juliet Himes, John Sherb, and Jeff Yitzhak.
Welcome to the City Council. You only need to give us your first and last name, and the clock will count down from two. Mr. Parker.
Yeah, Terry Parker, and I did prepare for 3 minutes.
Then we'll give you three.
Thomas Jefferson actually foresaw individual liberty becoming secondary to government powers when he said, "The natural process of things is for liberty to yield and government to gain ground." That is so true in Portland, where the city that works refers to forcibly taking more of its citizens' hard-earned income only to dictate how the populace should live. There are obviously two Portlands here, one for the elitists and their taxpayer-funded toys, and one for the rest of us. Double standard examples include flights to China and the Netherlands by bureaucrats, where each round-trip airplane seat has a carbon footprint akin to driving a car the distance of 5,000 miles, and where the concept of building a web of less than financially self-sustainable streetcars ignores the carbon footprint of producing the steel rails and digging up the streets to put them in. This is a place where driving is frowned upon, only to have city police supervisors drive the equivalent of Hummers, where huge fire trucks respond to medical emergencies, and where city code inspectors travel around in single occupancy cars instead of using public transit or bicyclists. Motorists are discriminately overtaxed while irresponsible deadbeat bicyclists are free to act like spoiled little children with special privileges and immunities. Elected officials live in single-family homes with generous yards, but expect the majority of the people to be packed in like sardines and warehoused in tenement-style, high-density heat island development. This plan calls for almost everything new or rebuilt, making the costly replacement of infrastructure structures and products not unlike excessive consumption. Overall, this climate action plan is yet another social engineering power play where local governments are endeavoring to dictate the lifestyle, housing, and transportation choices of the people, even what people eat. Adopting the plan as proposed throws out democratic principles this country was founded upon and turns Portland and Multnomah County into a socialist state, where public officials become totalitarian dictators, utilizing fear, one-sided, and even biased tax policy to control life's daily, day-to-day activities. The plan also places handcuffs on the economy, some of which are already in place, by only promoting specific types of jobs while ignoring how many many existing jobs will be eliminated. The biggest threat to the ecosystems and sustainability of the planet is overpopulation of the human race. Having an extra child in the family has 20 times the carbon footprint compared to driving an efficient car. Yet this action plan aims to accommodate an increase in population rather than discouraging it. The bottom line is this climate action plan, as proposed, is designed to give the appearance of sodality, can't pronounce that, to a pure wind, when in actuality the intended purpose is to enact heavy-handed socialist controls over the people severely limiting basic rights and freedom of choice. There is an old proverb that says, when an elephant dances, the grass gets trampled. Instead of trampling the historically fought freedoms this country was founded upon, with a politically motivated action plan that resembles an oversized oppressive elephant, any manipulative social engineering policies directed at and to be imposed on the people are best placed in the shredder. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
3 minutes exactly.
3 minutes. You're well practiced. It's good to see you again, sir.
I hope I could be as precise. I'm Jim Newcomer, and I'm with Transition PDX. Transition Towns had a three-meeting forum in which we discussed the plan in detail and submitted suggestions to the staff. And I also want to echo the words of others who think the staff did a terrific job and listened to the comments that were brought in. We're very heartened by that. I just want to stress that this is probably the most important work you can do. The increasing threats to human life in the way they're taking place on the globe, from water to fuel, fossil fuel to climate change, all are nonlinear. Many of them will change, we can anticipate, in the next 10, 20, 30 years in unexpected and rapid ways. So this, it's extremely important to be planning ahead so that we are in the process of planning and we're already geared for these kinds of changes. So I'm saying this also to you kids back here because we're doing this for you and your participation is crucial. What Transition seeks to do is organize neighborhoods in, to do all those things that a city government can't do. And I was, when I was observing the Peak Oil Task Force,